Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Virtue Signal. I'm Bill Whittle. This is my co-host, Alfonso Rachel. And this is where we talk a little bit about philosophy and morality underneath the politics of the day. And Zoe, I just finished a Moving Back to America segment on the overwhelming happiness I felt watching the American women's soccer team lose the match 3-0 to Sweden in the first round at the Olympics. So I thought it'd be fun for us to talk about patriotism.
Okay.
Dinesh D'Souza was also happy that the American soccer team lost. For those of you who are not familiar with it, the American soccer team is led by Megan Rapinoe and is filled with the most woke of the woke people. They love to trash the flag, trash the country, took a knee during the Olympics, playing of the national anthem. They didn't wear USA. They wore Black Lives Matter, those kind of folks. So they've been making a lot of noise and they lost. But what I wanted to talk to you about today, Zoe, was that I felt good that they lost. And Dinesh D'Souza put it probably the best. He said he was happy too. He said, it's not that I'm anti-American. It's that I'm anti-American. And so why is it, do you think, that somebody who loves their country as much as me and 100 million other Americans, and you too probably, feel so good about watching America lose a game in the Olympics? It tells me that there's something about the idea of the country beyond just the fact that, oh, okay, so there's our flag and here's this year's crop of athletes that we have to support.
Well, you're right, man. It's not that we feel good about America losing, and it's not like I want to gloat or anything like that or rejoice in somebody's.
I do.
but bear with
me. You're a better man than I am.
Bear with me, man. Here's the thing. We're happy that, to put it mildly, we're happy that they lost. It's like, no, you lost. America didn't lose. Y'all don't even represent America. I don't even know why you guys even wasted your time doing this. You could have gone someplace else. But funny how you got there from America. America was your springboard to go ahead and do what it is that you're doing. But
we're paying the bill too, by the way.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know, it's kind of like off subject, but it reminds me of like when I was in marching band and we would get out there, man, and I'm playing my guts out, right? And, you know, we wouldn't even place. And they're like, you know, everybody's all sad because, you know, they lost, you know, the band lost. And like, the band lost. I didn't. I got out there.
Thing to keep in mind.
Exactly. Man. I was out there winning, but, you know, not to be conceited or anything like that, but I was trying to cut it up. But, you know, it's that kind of thing. We're not rejoicing in America's loss. I mean, it's sad, though, that these people are representing us. Are supposed to represent us? Like, no, you representing yourself.
Well, there's a picture that I used in that segment from just before the U.S. team lost to Sweden 3-0, which they tell me in soccer is a big win. It's a field goal, man. there's a picture of the American women's team all taking a knee, except it's like Megan is on the left, and there's like three or four women, and then there's another three or four women, but between them are three women who are standing up while the rest of their teammates are taking a knee, and they got their head held high. And I said to myself, you know, God bless these women, and that's not just something they have to deal with on a, you know, photo shoot basis. If they're going to stand for the national anthem in the face of this rest of this heat, they have to put up with this all the time from the rest of their teammates. So it's not like there is no patriotism anymore. It seems to me that in the case of these women, that people like Megan are so filled with themselves, you know, they're so full of themselves, and so the country is, you know, secondary to them, and they think, well, what I feel is more important. They're not representing America; they're representing themselves. Mm-hmm. America's along for the ride. And this is not only unpatriotic, it's also un-American to the degree that we have as a culture, I think, a marvelous, remarkably good ideal that our heroes should be humble, that we expect real heroes to not thump their chest and talk about what amazing heroes they are, you know? I mean, the charm of Superman, right, is that he's, you know, he's got his glasses and he's looking at he's not like, I just saved another train full of civilians, you know? Somebody bring me the head of a pig. You don't We don't, as a culture, go for that. There are some cultures that really do like their heroes to be, you know, vainglorious and arrogant, and it's not for us. And so in another sense, they're being unpatriotic, not just because of their disrespect for the flag, but because of their attitude is disrespecting this American idea of, and it's not unique to America, but this American ideal anyway, of a hero being somebody who represents society or something greater and is humbled by their opportunity to become a hero and is not filled with themselves so much that they have to, you know, glorify it.
Sure, man. And as far as like the women's team go, they lost when they emboldened men to appropriate their gender. It's like despite this strength of feminism, y'all are going to allow men to come in and dominate you in the things that you're doing. And of course, you have these men out there being dominated from the inside by a female influence. It's bad all around. But
it is.
It comes down to, that's why I keep saying pride. Pride is poison. You know, pride in the hands of anybody, it's going to go sour. If they had the humility, they don't have the humility and they don't have the gratitude. Do you see
that's
gratitude?
A word.
Right. Do you see any gratitude in what they're doing? No. I mean, sure, they may give the lip service of thanking all of my supporters and stuff like that. No, people who supported you in your pride. They didn't support you in your talents. They didn't support you in your efforts. They didn't support you in your representation of this country. They supported you in your pride. And you're showing some sort of false gratitude as far as that goes. I mean, even in our heroes, you know, like take maybe our comic book heroes or mythological heroes like Thor. You know, Thor is arrogant and, you know, he's got a lot of hubris and stuff like that. But when you read the narratives of him, like especially like it's in the comic book genre, he comes to this humbling experience.
Right.
And
that's right.
And when he's humbled, then he can do the real hero stuff. And, you know, for these people, I don't know what humbling experience it's going to take for them, but they're driven by, well, once again, it's driven by the coin of pride and insecurity. These are terribly insecure people.
Absolutely,
while being
yes.
being very proud people. It's such a weird dynamic between those two things.
So let's get off of the recent thing with the Olympics and staying on the theme of patriotism. I'd like to get your opinion on an expression that was in wide use, at least 100 years ago, probably a little longer than that. But there's a quote from somebody, an American, who said, I would always wish my country to be right, but it's my country, right or wrong. Mm. Mark Twain had a big problem with that. He basically said, look, you love your country. The government is not the country. The system is not the country. You love the country. You love the idea of the country. And that this idea that, well, it's something, we just did something as a country that's morally abhorrent. We don't do an awful lot of that. In fact, I think we do very, very little of it. But nevertheless, I think it is important that you're able to face the aspects of patriotism that, like anyone else or any other country, there are failings. And I think what I'm trying to say is to blind yourself to those failings with the big number one, you know, foam finger is not patriotic either. This is the problem right now. The problem is not that people are criticizing America. It's that they're criticizing America by 7 or 8 orders of magnitude out of proportion to what it deserves. But there are people and there are times when just blind patriotism, you know, will get people to rally behind a cause that is not worthy of the country.
Man, and that's, you know, we come back to this, and forgive me for the audience if I sound redundant when I say this, is that's why I keep saying based on what? When we have this this morality or whether it's pride or justice, according to what? You know, what is this basis? What is the standard that we're going to base this on? Because what we end up having, Bill, is that we end up having the moral Olympics. We end up having
You betcha. You know, every day.
Exactly. The victim Olympics, the justice Olympics. People out there in this competition of who's more moral, who's struggling the most, who's doing this and who's doing that. And once again, it's all based on pride. When at the end of the day, somebody is trying to one up someone else in this supremacy, and the ones of morality or victimhood or the one who has the authority to just keep America in this indictment. Where does it stop? What is the goalpost? This phantom goalpost that keeps on moving. So we got to keep going through this, you know, over and over again in a country that people have. Too many people have misunderstood when we're talking about a country that recognizes your God-given freedom, your God-given right to think for yourself. And it's like, okay, you guys are going to, this is what you want to do with your freedom? Really? It's, but, you know, who am I to say? Until they want to take their ideas of liberty and freedom and make it policy for us to live by, thereby making us forfeit our right to think and live free and give freely and stuff like that. You know, but you have these moral, so-called woke supremacists who really believe that other people are inferior to them. And just the irony of it is that these people claim to hate supremacy and they associate supremacy with being white. Mm-hmm. Yet that is what they are obsessed with. So it's, yep. it's Twilight Zone stuff, man.
Surely is. Mark Twain, just to say I'm a fan, I just feel like he's a friend of mine, wrote, I think it was called The War Prayer, but it was probably the most damning indictment of the idea of patriotism, or at least war for the sake of your country that I've ever read. He wrote a much longer essay, I think, called To the Person Sitting in Darkness, and he was talking about the Spanish-American War. So whether it was ginned up or not with the Maine and all the yellow... yellow journalism. Initially, the Spanish-American War was fought at least ostensibly to kick the Spanish out of Cuba and have Cuba be free. Mm. So we sail around the world and we sink the Spanish fleet in Manila Bay in the Philippines. And then we decide, hey, these Philippines look kind of nice. I think maybe we'll just take them. Mm. Now, Twain said that up until that time, America had been playing by an entirely different rule book. And that the game America was playing was untouchable. You know, it was just so untouchably noble and pure. And he basically said, now we're going to start acting like a European power. Now we're going to come in and colonize and do all these things. I personally think that little moment in the Philippines, right at the very, very end of the 1800s, early 1900s, was about, maybe 10 years, maybe, when America actually did act as if it was an imperialist power, and this is what it's been accused of, you know, ever since then. But as a country, there's never been a power in the world, in the history of the world, that behaves with this kind of magnanimity. We fight we're fighting Germany and Japan, two countries that were an existential threat to everything we believe in, antithetical to everything we believe in, brutally, brutally, brutally fought. And the second the war is over, we reach down and help these people up and rebuild their economy. It's never been done before. When a country let's come back to the Philippines. Like when the Philippines decided that they didn't want American troops there, we left Subic Bay and we left the airfield there, Clark Air Force Base. Mm. Now the Soviets have them, but the Russians do. But my point is that as a country, there has never been a more moral power in the world. You can claim a superior morality to America's track record if you're Luxembourg and don't have to do anything. And that goes for you too, Sweden. But in terms of countries that have had to insert themselves into the power structure of the world, there has never been, and I suspect never will be, a militarily dominant power, culturally dominant, scientifically dominant, economically dominant power that has behaved itself as well, just as well-mannered as America really is.
Yeah, and it's like you say, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. And you know, usually when nations will do something like help out another nation, you belong to them now, you in their pocket. And it's typical of people to project that same thing onto America. The history is wrought with these imperialistic maneuvers and stuff like that, where a nation will take over a nation. And for some reason, somehow America has become the innovator of these things. America is this imperialistic faction. It innovated slavery. And it's like, you know, these things were going on for a long time, right? How is it that America is constantly being judged for these things, taking over nations or nation building or stealing their resources and stuff like that? No, that stuff has been going on long before America, but it's because America is this melting pot. I think just what happens that is people come here and they bring, it's like one of those things that can't be helped. And this is why the word of God talks about this with the Israelites. When the foreigner wanted to come in and be a part of Israel's nation, the word says you are to love the foreigner as your native born. Right? Love them as your native born. And why is that? Why do you love the foreigner as your native born? Because when the native born, in order for the foreigner to come in and be loved as the native born, that means that the foreigner has to assimilate to the laws that the native born was under. We will love you according to that, but you can't come in and project your culture onto our culture and impose it's like if you see that we're ordered to go to bring a military campaign here or to spread our territory here, we're not doing it for the frivolous sake of, hey, you have our resources and we want them. No, what you're doing with your resources causes disease. It's disease, it spreads oppression, it spreads a whole lot of problems. And if we have to go scorched earth on you, we will. That's a totally different approach than saying, hey, you want our we want your territory and we're just going to take it. You know, so, but these kind of, that's why, you know, the Lord tells them, you know, you have to know and makes these distinctions about who's going to be coming in. And these are the things that need to be understood quite clearly. If not, these prejudices will infiltrate your nation, and your nation will somehow become the bad guy, and it will rot from within.
Yeah. I remember back during the Iraq invasion and in the years afterwards when people said, oh, it was just a war for oil. Mm. I remember thinking to myself and occasionally having a chance to deploy this against people who had that opinion. I said, well, you know, I know a little bit about military strategy. Mm. And if this was a war for oil, what it would look like is we wouldn't give a damn about the cities. We wouldn't have police. We wouldn't have troops in the cities trying to maintain order and open schools and keep voting on us. We would put an armored cordon around the oil fields, and we'd put air cover over the convoys. We'd take it from the oil fields to Basra, load it onto American tankers, and ship it on out of there. Mm. And that's not what we're doing. It's nothing close to what we're doing. And in 1991, we were sitting on top of the Kuwaiti oil fields that were all burning because of Saddam Hussein. We put out the fires, and then we came home. So this negative image of America doesn't hold any water, and it never has. Right. And this is the point that I'd like to close with. The destruction of the American ideal is not coming from foreigners. The immigrants tend to be the most pro-American people I've ever met. The people who are trying to defame the country are people here and around the world. And the reason that they hate America so, and the reason that this ongoing coordinated push has been going on for 80 years now or something, or longer, is because America truly is, honestly is, the only obstacle to tyranny in the world. Not just the American power, not just the power of our culture and the military and the economy, all of it. America, as an example, is a fatal obstacle to tyranny and authoritarianism and totalitarianism anywhere. And that's why totalitarians and authoritarians and fascists and all the rest understand that if you're going to have power even over your own people, you have to, if not destroy America, you have to destroy the idea of America, which really comes down to the same thing.
Definitely. And that's, you know, the Lord talks about, you know, if you try to enter in my sheep pen outside of my protocols, you want to try to climb in through the side gate or whichever, I'm going to call you a criminal. That's what he says. And now in America, Is there evils associated with America? Of course there is. You know, have things been done and injustice be done? Of course, nobody's perfect. But when we say that these things haven't been done or try to, mitigate these things to preserve the image of America, like once again, we actually give the guilty parties a pass. There is a guilty party of these things and injustice has been done. And let's not forget that that is the Democrat Party. The things that America is so so still so bitter over the injustice, particularly our domestic injustices, quote unquote. That's not an American thing. That's not an American behavior, an American attitude. That's not what we're built on. But you can't get away from the fact that you're going to have people who are going to take gross liberties with that. People who are going to assume to have their own truth and do what it is they want to do because they have a perverted idea of what freedom is. That's where the Democrat Party is. And they have done these things and they still have yet to be held to account. But we're just trying to live our lives, man. We're just trying to represent, you know, between, you know, I think you are trying, I'm trying, our audience is trying to say, look, man, can we just hold up the idea of what this nation was founded on and try to enjoy that. But the thing is, it has value. So you don't just get to enjoy it. It has to be maintained. It has to be defended. And we have within our borders, people who have been trying to tear that down for years. This ain't a new thing with the Democrats. It's not new. They've been doing it for years. And that's where these injustices are coming from. And they have to be called to account.
Yeah. Well, as I said in the Moving Back to America segment on this, you know, it's appalling and shaming that we would send such anti-Americans to represent America as the American women's soccer team. But it's also tremendously good news and a good sign that for the first time in Olympic history, a country has cheered for its team to lose because nobody wants what these woke mongers are trying to shove down our throats. That'll do it for this edition of the Virtue Signal, made possible by the members at BillWhittle.com. We'd love to have you if you want to become one. Just go over to BillWhittle.com. You can become a member, or you can hit a one-time donation if you like. And until next time, for Alfonso Rachel, I'm Bill Whittle. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you on the Virtue Signal.